This is Emmer's Eclectic, and today I want to talk about just a personal viewpoint, I guess, of how I keep hearing people say to people who have gone through some sort of child abuse or domestic violence, and, you know, I'm talking about this because this does relate to what we talk about on this podcast, relationships, and sex, and, you know, where that all comes from and what that all comes down to. And, you know, it's an integral part of a relationship. So is how you deal with the people in your life. And I keep hearing people, you know, why do you stay? Why do you stay in abusive relationships? Why aren't you leaving? Why didn't you leave? You know, it always comes back to blaming the victim. And I think that that has an integral effect on our society as a whole, particularly since it's mostly women who are, you know, in these abusive relationships. And I do want to shine a light on the fact that men do get abused, sometimes by, you know, larger women who are taller, bigger, whatever, more muscular than them. Sometimes that they will abuse maybe a man who is a shorter, smaller partner of theirs. Or they'll just abuse, they're just a little bit of nothing, but they're really abusive. I mean, if you've ever watched, and I always go back to this, because it's funny, but it's not funny. And this show took a look at that. But on Friends, when Joey is dating a much smaller person, a much smaller woman, who I can't remember the name of the actress, but she used to play Punky Brewster when she was a kid. But she's much smaller than him, shorter, petite. And every time that he says something that she thinks is funny, she just hits him, just punches him on his chest. And the whole show is built around the fact that he's trying to tell everybody that this woman is abusing him. Like, she, when she hits him, it hurts. And everybody's like, oh, poor little Joey, this little girl's hitting you. Oh, does it hurt? And really, it does hurt because she's hitting him really hard. And in the end, we see that the woman is an abusive woman. She just likes to hit men. And maybe because she's smaller, maybe because she's shorter, maybe it empowers her because she is smaller, that, you know, she needs to make these men who she's dating afraid of her so that they don't hurt her. I mean, if you really look at statistics, when women get grabbed or taken by men, it's usually bigger men who are grabbing much smaller women because they know that there's not going to be a lot of fight there, you know, that they're going to be able to overpower them. If you are a taller woman or a bigger woman, and, you know, and you keep your eyes up and you're always looking around, you're probably less likely to get grabbed because they know that they're going to have to put up a big fight from you before you go anywhere. Well, a smaller woman, they can grab. So it's kind of scary. So that was kind of what they were focusing on in this show, is that she was smaller and it made her feel more powerful. So to punch Joey around, you know, and to punch men around. But it doesn't make it right, because she was leaving bruises on him and she was really hurting him, and he broke up with her because he just couldn't take it anymore. So it does happen to men. I mean, that's not even the extreme side of it. You know, there are some women who can get pretty brutal. So I'm not saying that this is only a one-sided thing. I think men get abused too. Now, the men who talk about being, you know, hit after they've hit somebody, well, if you hit me, I'm going to fight back, right? If you try to beat me up, I'm going to try to defend myself. So if those men are just, you know, wimps and jerks, if they're complaining about somebody hitting them back after they've hit them, right? Especially if you're a larger man. But back to the original subject was, you know, people saying that, why do people stick around? Why don't they leave? Why do they put up with what they put up with in these relationships? Well, I've been through an abusive relationship, and I know what that entails. There's a lot of reasons that you don't leave, and many of them are, if somebody is abusing you in the first place, they're already planning out how they're going to keep you around, right? Because they know that if they don't, they don't kind of get you in a position to where you can't leave, to where you're totally dependent on them, to where you are financially independent, etc. They know if that happens, then once they start abusing you, you will leave them. You will leave them. So a lot of times, if men are like that, if they are looking for someone to abuse, which I think a lot of men do. I mean, I think that that's something that they want, and it's kind of sick, but they want to have control over a woman. They want to keep her around, and they feel that in order to do that, they have to abuse her. Like, for instance, I just saw, I think George Takei posted something, and this is the kind of mindset that these kind of men have, these kind of abusive men, or men who think that they think that they're the kings of the world and they should lord over everyone, right? Those are the only kind of people who abuse people. And unfortunately, there's a lot of men who abuse women and abuse their children, abuse the people around them, because they think that that's the way it's supposed to be. Because maybe their father saw them to be that way. Maybe their stepfather saw them to be that way. Or that's what they've seen, you know, as an example in the world. And then they take those misogynistic negative views and they take them to the extreme. So on George Takei's page, they posted a story which was kind of upsetting. This, you know, sort of country white guy talking about how he wishes that he could beat up all the gay kids. And he was serious. And wishing that he could just pummel all the gay kids to teach them for being gay, right? And that's this white male, you know, closed-minded, misogynistic answer to everything, you know, is I wish I could, you know, smack some sense into him. I wish I could beat some sense into that person. Well, you know, that's not going to do anything but make people hate you even more. So when you abuse your partner, when you abuse your children, when you abuse your friends, family, coworkers, the only thing that you're accomplishing is making them hate you, making them not like who you are, making them not want you around. So, I mean, I would think that that would be the logical thing to, a conclusion to come to, but I think sometimes men are brought up in this society where it, you know, basically society caters to them because it's a patriarchal society, misogynistic society, that they really sometimes just don't get it because they're just so used to it all going their way. I mean, they get it, but they just act like they don't get it, right? Or they just don't care because they've always gotten away with all the things that they've done. So they just think that that's just the way things should be. And that's the way things are. Right. But what they are starting to learn as equality comes to the forefront, and this is why so many men do not support equality, is that, you know, things are changing and they're going to have to change and they're going to have to be better people. And life's going to be a little bit harder for them because everything's not just going to be handed to them. Right. So these are the kind of guys that you're dealing with that are abusive. They're so steeped in misogyny. They're so steeped in that patriarchal society that has catered to them their whole lives that they really believe that they can get away with anything. And the sad thing about domestic violence is, you know, they think they can beat someone up. I mean, you've seen the recordings of sports stars and celebrities, you know, that are, you know, they're being recorded on a camera in the house throwing somebody around, like literally picking up women and throwing them across the room with babies and pens and children standing there watching it all, right? And they know the cameras are on, yet they're doing this, and they really think nobody is going to do anything about it. They really think that woman is going to continue to let them do what they do to them. And they really think in their minds that that is okay, you know. Men seem to, this is where mansplaining comes from. Men seem to think that they are our parents, not our partners. They seem to think that they are our overlords, our rulers, our kings, and they can talk down to us as women and children. Those kind of men do not see anyone else except other men as equals. And even at times, they don't see other men as equals. They see themselves as above even the men that they hang around. And that's the problem you get. And I mean, I don't think that deep down they really believe that. Maybe it's even an act that they're putting on because they're afraid that they don't want someone to be in control of them. Maybe they were abused when they were children. So they've decided to flip the switch and now they're going to be the abuser, right? And they're not going to let some other man pick on them. But this is the way that they think. And that's why we have these problems. Because of the insecure, low self-esteem that really is at the base of all that, right? That these men have grown up in, right? It could be abandonment issues. It could be abuse that they've grown up with. But there's a reason that so many men are turning out this way. And I've talked in other podcasts about how I think not only domestic abuse of, you know, women, but domestic abuse of children, just abuse overall, is changing our society. It's like a cancer in our society that, you know, now we're having the children of all of that abuse that's been going on for all these years are coming out of that, and they're all screwed up and messed up, and now they're raising children. So each generation, it gets worse and worse. And that's why they talk about generational abuse, stopping the cycle of the abuse. Because if you don't stop the cycle, then it's not just going to affect your family. It's not going to just affect you. It's going to affect the whole of society. Because all these other families that are, you know, in that cycle of abuse and can't seem to get out of it, are, you know, they're, it's like a poison. It's like a poison in every generation. It's like a cancer that just keeps getting bigger and bigger because each generation has gone through worse abuse than the ones before. Or, thankfully, counseling, awareness, getting out of the cycle of abuse is changing in each generation because they're saying, I'm not putting up with that anymore because we're more aware of it. And each generation is getting better. But I think there's so many that are just getting worse too. So we have to deal with that. So I don't think people realize how much domestic violence disrupts the life of a victim. I just don't think they understand it, right? You not only have to get away from the abuser when you're in an abusive situation, but you have to choose to lose contact with everyone in your life or anyone that you had in your life while you were in this relationship. And many times the abuser will, you know, shut you off, isolate you from your family, your friends, your support. And in doing that, they'll make you, you know, kind of come over and be part of their friends, their family, their life. So even though this is all their friends and their family, you know, when you leave, you're going to leave people that you've come to love, probably. People who have actually supported you. Maybe, you know, that's something that people have to think about too. So you not only have to get away from the abuser, but you have to choose to lose contact with everyone in that life that you had with them, right? And that's hard. That's hard to do. It's their world. It's, you know, these are all people who are enablers of the abuser, because the abuse wouldn't have continued if those people would have stepped forward and protected you, right? Protected the victim. Let's say that. And the abuse would not have continued if people had stepped up and said, hey, this isn't right what you're doing to this victim, this person. You need to stop. And I know that, Adam, in my own experience, that if you embarrass or humiliate the abuser enough and you're not quiet about it, that's the biggest thing, is when you're quiet about it. I've talked about in the past, I've gone through domestic violence myself. I didn't stay in it very long because I don't put up with that kind of stuff. But it was with somebody who I'd been married to for years. And then out of the blue, he starts thinking he can abuse me physically. And of course, I found out there was drugs involved, cocaine, you know, all kinds of other things were happening, right? And which is why I got out of the marriage. But, and there's, you know, I'm not saying that abuse is okay because somebody's using drugs. It's not. It's abuse. But there were reasons that he did this sort of seismic change from being the boy that I fell in love with to being somebody else, you know? And so, and it was a side of him that I had never, ever seen. And I've been told in the halls of NA and AA that that's what happens when people get addicted. They turn into someone, it's a Jekyll and Hyde syndrome, you know? When they're on drugs, when they're coming down from drugs, you know, when they're, you know, and then there's times when they're clean and they're not doing drugs, then they come back to being who they really are. And many times taking drugs is about people who aren't going and getting diagnosed for bipolar, depression, you know, borderline personality, all of those things that schizophrenia sometimes, you know, and they're too afraid. They don't want that label on their heads, or they don't want to have to look in the mirror and say that to themselves. I mean, how many people want to be known as being schizophrenic, you know? But in knowing those things, then you're able to properly get them taken care of medically. You're able to get the right medication rather than trying to self-medicate with alcohol and drugs. And that's what I saw when I was in the rooms of NA and AA, which I was suggested to me to go to AA meetings and NA meetings so that I could hear what recovering addicts were saying, so that I could understand the addicts in my own life, right? And understand why they did what they did and what brought them there. And a lot of these addicts were actually very generous in answering my questions. And me saying, well, why would you do this? Why would you do that? Hearing my story and then stepping up and saying, here's why that happened. Here's what he was doing. This is my experience with when I was doing drugs and da, da, da. And it was able to give me a better understanding and maybe have more compassion for the person who was abusing me, for the person who was an addict, right? But it still doesn't excuse the abuse. And many of them said that. It doesn't excuse that person abusing you. You have to get away from that situation. And if an addict is not going to go into recovery, they're only going to get worse. They're only going to take more drugs, and they're only going to abuse you even more. And many times they're abusing you because they don't want you to find out what they're doing. They don't want you to figure out they're doing drugs. They don't want you to figure out you're stealing their money. They're stealing your money, et cetera, et cetera. So, okay. So particularly with abusive situations, the people who choose to stay in contact with the abuser, even after finding out that you've been abused by the abuser, those are the kind of people who are sort of enablers of the abuser, you know, or those, you know, who even never knew, you know. They kind of stick around and they don't know that the abuser is abusing. They may even have a feeling that something isn't right, and know that something isn't right about this person, but they sort of enable this person, and there's reasons for that, you know? So after isolating you, the abuser, and only having, you know, like his friends and family in your life so that he can be more controlling, she can be more controlling. Many times, moving you away from your friends and family, like, you know, I was moved 50-something miles away. You know, they were close enough, but far enough away that I couldn't just give them a call and tell them to come get me, which, you know, my friends and family did a couple times drive 50-something miles to come get me, but it was going to take an hour or more for them to get there, so I had to be really careful if I asked for them to do that, okay? But many times they'll move you away from your friends and your family. Your whole life is destroyed once you choose to leave your abusive partner because you've lost contact with all of those people. Many times when you're that far away from people, you're not seeing them as often. You're not talking to them as often. I mean, and that's the goal of the abuser, is to cut you off from all that so that they can control you and abuse you. And usually they need to control you and abuse you for their own, you know, sick reasons, right? that maybe they know you're going to find out that they're a drug addict. Maybe they know you're going to find out that they're not exactly healthy mentally, you know, that they do have these other issues like a depression or schizophrenia or whatever. But the plan is, that's the plan. You know, that's pretty much the plan. It's just to get you away from everybody. The abuser wants to make it hard for you. Hard for you to leave them and leave their abuse, right? So this is part of why people don't leave, you know, because they get entangled in that life. And it's really hard to walk away the people that they think that they have a connection with. But then many times once these people, victims, leave these situations, they find that those people are going to side with the abuser, right? And they're not going to help them anyway, so they're not really their friend, right? And that was sort of the attitude that I took when I left, is anybody that had anything to do with him was no longer my friend, was no longer a family member, even though we were married. They were going to be on his side because, to me, they allowed him to abuse me, and even when they found out, even when I told them he was abusing me, they let it continue. They didn't, like, really make him, call him out and make him stop. But, like I said, it was probably the best thing I did was not staying quiet. The best thing I did was say, you know, right when it happened, like, right away, I didn't wait a year or two or whatever. When he did it, I told his mother, I told his sister, I told my family, I told all his friends, I told all my friends. I let everyone know what he was doing to me. And that's probably why it didn't get much worse. Because I stood up and said, you're not freaking going to do that to me. And I'm going to tell everybody you did it. And every time that you do something to me, I'm going to tell you. You better kill me because I'm going to go tell everybody. Because you better not do it to me again. Because everyone's going to know everything you do to me and I'm not going to be quiet about it. So every time you smack me, punch me, hit me, whatever you choose to do, I'm going to tell someone. And you need to go get help. And at that point, I knew that he had drug problems. I knew he had alcohol problems. And I placed the blame on the drugs and the alcohol when I really should have been placing the blame on him. Because no matter how high or how drunk he was, he shouldn't have been touching me, right? But, you know, you're with somebody for so many years, you think, wow, it's like black and white. It's like a switch has been flipped and they're not that person anymore. And you're just like, what happened? Well, it's the drugs. It's the alcohol. That's the switch they flipped that's changing them. But you just don't know what's going on. At that point, I didn't know he was doing cocaine. So I had no basis for that kind of thinking. And I just thought it was, what's happened? You know, why is he changing so much? So, okay. But anyway, that's the plan. The abuser wants to make it hard for you to leave. They want you to make it hard for you to leave and walk away from those connections that you've made, right? It's all been orchestrated by them. That's why they've isolated you, because they know that they're screwed up. They know that they have problems. And they know that once you figure it out, once you see who they really are, you may leave. And, you know, that's a risk everybody takes when they're in a relationship. That's a risk that everyone takes is, you know, when somebody really gets to know who I am, are they going to stick around? When they see the real me after maybe a year of dating, when that mask comes off and I trust this person and I'm just showing who I really am. When I have my meltdowns or whatever, are they going to stick around or are they going to look at me and go, I can't take this. You're too crazy, right? So I think that that's what people, everyone fears that, you know, to some extent, you know. I don't think it's as extreme for some people, you know. Like for me, I don't really feel like there's a lot that's bad about me, you know. There are, you know, I'm human. I have my flaws, but I don't think it's so bad that somebody's going to pick up and be like, I want to leave. You know, I think I'm generally a good person and I'm willing to work on relationships and I'm willing to do my part in that relationship to make it better. So, and that's the other part, you know, a lot of these people who are in abusive relationships, they're the only ones trying. They're the only ones trying to make it better. They're the only ones trying to make it work. And when you've got that aspect in your relationship, when you're the only one going to counseling, you're the only one trying to get help, You're the only one that's trying to change the situation for the better. It's over. If that person, that other person, isn't trying to make things better, the relationship is over because they don't care. They don't care to make it better. And if you're wanting to make it better, you know, when you're in a long-term relationship, each one of you is going to change and you're going to be different people as you go down the years. Because you're growing and you're changing and hopefully getting better as a person, hopefully growing and becoming wiser. And that's what a relationship should do. You know, you both should be growing, growing together, growing for the better, and both be happy in that growth and see the growth in each other and be happy for each other that that growth is happening. You know, better careers, more opportunities, or maybe just an easier life down the road where you can retire early, blah, blah, blah. I mean, we talked about that. We talked about retiring at 40, which was really exciting, and then being able to do whatever we wanted to do, to try any of the careers that we've always wanted to try, because we would be financially taken care of once the business made us enough money and we were able to invest enough. But unfortunately, in this economy, that got a little sticky too, because when you throw things in investment now, you know, the big wealthy companies or the big wealthy people can steal that all away from you, right? We've seen people's retirement just vanish because of a housing market crash or whatever, right? So you have to be really careful. But once you get to that point, you can do what you want. Okay, so then your life becomes about staying safe once you leave, if you try to leave an abuser, right? That's another thing that I think people forget is, okay, you've got this whole network that's been taken away from you, because they've taken you miles away from your family and friends that were supporting you. Now you're disconnected from those people, and they're probably even mad at you because you haven't talked to them in 7 to 10 years or whatever, right? And then now, you know, you don't want to walk away from this unit that you're, that he's put you in, that you've, you know, you've maybe fooling yourself that you're safe, or maybe you really are safe. So your life becomes about staying safe once you leave, because you can't rely on the people from your past, and you can't rely upon the people that are part of his network, right? The people that he knows, his family, his friends. So what are you going to do? You're on your own. And I think that that's the biggest part that people forget, is when a woman leaves with her children and she has nothing, because the man usually makes sure that he's in charge of the money. The house, the cars, and everything are in his name. She has nothing when she walks out that door, and she ends up at the domestic violence shelter, which is why you should be donating to domestic violence shelter, because this is what these abusers do. And, you know, the only thing that she has is that shelter to keep her safe, and the networks that are built within those shelters and within that, you know, domestic violence society to help women who are walking away from this situation. And many times they're coming with 2, 3, 4 kids, because that man has made sure that he has saddled her with a bunch of kids. Some of them have 6 to 12 kids, you know? And many times when a man is really adamant about the fact that he wants to have a lot of kids, I will bet you 9 to 20, that guy's an abuser, because he wants to saddle that woman with children so she can't leave. And then I will bet you that he's in charge of all the finances, and she has no way of getting any money, because then she can't walk away from the situation, because now she's got all these kids. Where's she going to go? Even her own family probably won't take her in, because they're like, we can't care for all those kids. We can't afford that, right? And if she does do it, then they're going to end up babysitting the kids, watching the kids while she's working 3 jobs, right, to try to support them all. So it makes it a little impossible for a woman to leave that situation. And it's all planned. I mean, look at all of these religious sects that you see and what they do to women, you know, how they abuse their pedophiles and abuse little girls, and they abuse the women. They get them to the point where they can't leave. Like, that's what happens. You know, they're saddled with children. They're saddled with guilt because of what has been going on, the weird sex stuff that's been going on within the society, and they can't tell people. They're embarrassed. Many, many women who are abused, who are victims, are embarrassed to talk about what they've put up with, how much abuse they've put up with, before they finally were able to get out the door. and they're embarrassed that their friends aren't talking to them anymore. They're embarrassed that their family's not talking to them anymore. So those are all things you have to consider when these people, when women are, you know, trying to get out of this situation. So your life becomes about trying to stay safe, trying to leave, and trying to find the network that's going to help you to get out. And the other thing is, you know, you can't contact anyone that he knows, because if you contact those people, they're going to call him. And because they're going to say, man, I don't want the burden of this. I don't want the burden of these six kids or three kids or whatever. Because if she ends up coming here, she's going to end up living here. I'm going to end up taking care of. That's what people are thinking. So they'll pick up the phone and they'll call him to get you to go back to him so that they don't have the responsibility anymore. And I can tell you that didn't happen to me, but I can tell you that it's happened to other people. And that, you know, people that they trusted, people they thought were going to take care of them, even their own family, has called the abuser just to get them out of their hair so that they didn't have to deal with it anymore. And I've had people say, go back to the abuser. I had people in my life tell me to go back to the abuser when I was struggling. You know, just call him, just go back to him, you know, go back to the money. Even though, you know, a lot of that money was mine, that was being stolen from me, because the court systems lean more towards men than they do women. We had a business together. I can't tell you how many times the judge looked at me and called it his business, not our business, even though I had a piece of paper that said I was 50% owner of that business legally through the state, through the federal. I was deemed 50% owner of that business, and even on paper, right? But he kept calling it his business, because that's how male courtrooms run. You know, most of the courtrooms are made up of men, and they cater to the men who come in there, because when they look at every situation, if you've got a male judge, he's going to see himself in that guy, not in you. He's not going to see himself in you, particularly if that judge has gone through a divorce or a nasty divorce. They're going to side with that man before they side with you, because all they're going to be thinking about is their divorce and the nastiness that they went through. So they're going to want to help that guy more than they want to help you. I mean, that's just how it is. And unfortunately, many times women are left with nothing because the court system and the judges who are male, and even the women who are steeped in misogyny and think that way, who are judges, end up giving everything to the man, even though he doesn't deserve everything. And I know there's a lot of men who, you know, complain about child support or alimony. Trust me, whatever they end up paying isn't even what they should have paid. It's not even half of what they should have paid. We're still not there in this society, you know. And even when a woman walks in to a celebrity, like if she's married to a celebrity or whatever, even when she hits a high-powered lawyer, she still doesn't get everything that she should get. I mean, we can look at the Kevin Costner divorce recently. You know, he pretty much just kept pressuring until he got what he wanted. Because he knows he's a man in a male misogynist patriarchal society, and he can get what he wants. He knows he's already been through one nasty divorce. So he knows what he can get and what he can't get. He's experienced with that. So she ended up not getting quite what she should have gotten, I think, you know. But, you know, that's life, you know. All right, so that's what you have to deal with too. You have to remember that women are dealing with that, you know. They're either walking away with nothing or they're walking away with not enough. Like with me, I ended up fighting in court for years. And I ended up with debt on the house, debt on my cars, you know, nothing was paid for. But I ended up getting those things, but I ended up having to pay for them. And then only to find out that he had let the house go into foreclosure while the court trial was going on. He stopped paying on the payments. And then that's why they pushed for me to get the house, because he knew that that was one of the things that I was going to ask for. And so he just let it go into foreclosure. So then I had that put on my credit because I had to refinance the house, and I had a legal document in the divorce saying that the house was mine. So the loan companies didn't care. All they knew is it was mine now, and it was in foreclosure, and they were going to come after me, even though it was really him who put the foreclosure on the house. See what I'm talking about? So yeah, that's the kind of stuff that happens in a courtroom. So that's another reason that women probably don't walk away from things because they've seen people like me and what I've had to go through. I mean, I've millions of dollars that I lost. Millions. Because the court system decided to side with a man. Even though he was abusive and I proved it. And there was plenty of people who stepped forward to witness to that. He still got everything. And I got hardly anything. Because after 4 or 5 years, I just walked away because it was just not worth it. It was not worth him fighting in court because I knew that the court, the judge, did, everybody was siding with him, right? So why should I keep paying money to just end up having everything go to him anyway, right? So it's like a nightmare rebirth is what I relate this to. You know, you're leaving everything, you're sort of rebirthing your life, but it's a whole nightmare that you're walking into of, like I'm talking about, the foreclosure and things that they've done to your credit or things that they've said to everyone and people are actually believing, etc. You rarely have friends anymore that you had before, like I said. You know, you've got your friends that you haven't talked to in a while, so they're mad at you because he cut you off from those people. And then all the people that you were friends with for those years you were with this person, they're all connected to him, so you can't talk to them. And if your family is mad at you for leaving the abuser, which my family was, and it was because they had to care for me at some level, but not a lot. You know, I was pretty independent, and I always have been. Maybe you have kids. And you have to deal with all the drama, like they have to deal with all the drama of the ex calling them, because my ex kept calling my family and my friends trying to get them to talk me into coming back to him. That's what he wanted. He wanted me to come back to him, right? So calling and trying to find me, you know, he would call around to everybody and say, is she staying with you? Is she staying with you? Like he was harassing my friends, you know? And many times you may lose those friends because he's harassing them now. And, you know, he knows that they know he's abused you. And so he doesn't care what they think of him anymore. So he just keeps calling and he'll threaten them. I've had him threaten my friends, you know. So that's another thing that you have to consider when you're leaving, you know. So it cracks me up when people say, well, why don't you leave? Well, it's because you have to consider all this stuff. This is what's going to go down. And you know he's going to do all this stuff. If you leave him, he's literally told you before you've left that this is what he will do if you leave him, right? Or they actually side with the abuser, like your friends and family side with the abuser and they tell you to go back, like I said. Many times they want to avoid that responsibility, right? But like in my case, because the abuser, you know, does everything they can to keep you from getting any money, cars, houses, etc. The abuser wants you to be so desperate, so you have to come back to them before you have any other options, until you have no other option. And that's what they're trying to create. They're trying to create a situation where they're ruining the connections that you have now by harassing those people. So those people will be like, listen, I'm done. You're on your own. Get away from me. And many people do that. Many people just say, like, you know, until you leave him, I'm not going to, you know, talk to you anymore. Well, that's not a good thing to do, you know, because you're just isolating that person even more. So, okay. So the family might be resentful, like I was saying before, that you walked away from wealth, which my family was. They were resentful of that wealth that they were benefiting from. Right? Like every time we went out to dinner, we paid for everything. Anytime that we went on trips and they came with us, we paid for everything. Da, da, da. And this is, you know, it's because many times the abuser will flaunt that wealth. They'll use that wealth, throw money at people, you know, your friends, your family, everybody for years, and trying to pay them off and paying people around you off so they can continue to abuse you and people won't say anything. Because, well, you know, he got me into this celebrity party and he got me into this or that, or he's been paying for this. And every time we go out, I never have to pay, that kind of stuff. And I actually lost friends when I left my ex. They just disappeared. because they knew that I was no longer going to be paying for the nights out. I was no longer going to be helping them maybe with something they needed help with financially. That I did not have the money to do that any longer. And poof, they were gone. And that's when you find out who your real friends are, right? That's when you find out. And, you know, it's sad, but it's true. And people wonder why celebrities get away with all that abuse, like Johnny Depp and different people. And even with the people that are around them. Like, I even heard he was abusing all of his staff and everything, right? That's how. They literally pay people with gifts and meeting other stars, living the star life, all that stuff, so that they can continue to abuse people, you know? So they need to keep that star alive. That's why he was so desperate to get his name back out there. That's why he was so desperate to stay in that starlight, because that's all Johnny Depp has, right? Once he loses that, who's going to want to be around him? He's a pain in the butt. You know, he's abusive, he's nasty, and he was able to do whatever he wanted to. He was able to abuse anyone he wanted to. People who worked for him, people who hung around him, his wife. He was able to get away with all that abuse because he was a star. And if you were around him, you got to be connected to all those famous, wealthy, connected people, and then you might become a star. That's the whole thing that, you know, I think anyone who's involved with somebody like that is about, right? Not everybody's like that, but I would say a majority of the people around them are hangers-on to kind of just who want to be in that limelight, right? And that's why you always see abusers in entertainment with an entourage around them. You know, they're literally paying those people to be their friends, to go along with how badly that they treat others, right? And, you know, they're there to you know, sort of rub against and be up against the other stars. In my case, his and my family and friends benefited from the abuser paying for things, right? Giving extravagant gifts, expensive gifts, or swooping in to financially cover and save them. But in the end, it was understood that the abuser was paying for their loyalty. I mean, I don't think anyone in my life didn't understand that, you know, that he was giving them something to pay for their loyalty. He may have even been telling them that behind my back. I don't know. He did say a lot of things behind my back, I found out later, and people weren't telling me, and I would look at him and be like, why didn't you tell me he was doing that? You know, oh, I thought you were happy, blah, blah, blah. No, you need to tell people that stuff. And it works for them. It works for the abusers. And when you leave the abuser, those family and friends will side with the favors and the money guy. Trust me, they will. They'll turn against you even though they know he is abusing you and he's continuing to abuse you. You're left alone many times with people telling you to go back to the money, to the security, to what they thought was going to be an endless supply of paid dinners, events, parties for them, because the abuser bought their loyalty. Like I said, they don't want to lose out on all that. They blame you once the abuser does walk away from them, right? Many may even try to succeed in staying friends with the abuser afterwards, and they'll dump you as a friend. He doesn't abuse them, you know, they don't care. So, you know, they don't care what he does to you. They benefit from their relationship with him, not you, right? And until they try, which is why the abuser tries to keep you from getting any money, from getting any homes, any cars, because, you know, then you'll have money and they'll want to stick around with you, right? But, you know, what people found out about me, even during the relationship with him, is that I wasn't going to be throwing money at them. You know, he would, but I wasn't going to. So that's another reason that people end up staying with the abuser. Until they try to help you. If they try to help you and the abuser finds out that they're helping you, or they actually believe you about the abuse, then the abuser turns that against them and makes their lives just as miserable as he's making your life, right? Narcissist abusers don't like it when they can't control people, but they loathe it when they had control and then they lose that control over someone. I'm reading something that I wrote earlier about this. I wanted to write everything down so that I wasn't losing track of my thoughts. It messes with their image of themselves being perfect. You know, narcissist abusers need to look perfect to the outside world. They need to have that image that they've built and they've taken so much time to build up. They can't have you tearing that image down. And I will tell you that I did tear that image down for my abuser, and he no longer talks to many of the friends that he has. He no longer talks. I mean, years, you know, a few years later, I bumped into some of his friends and they said that he had not even contacted them. And then his family members, his own family, were calling me, trying to get me to get them back into the fold with him, because he still has the business and he still has millions of dollars. You know, the business that I built, the business that I helped put there for him, he still has millions of dollars. And that's what they want to be a part of. His family does. You know, they're hoping that they'll benefit from that. Maybe even hoping they'll be in the will, right? A lot of people cater to rich people because they want to be in the will. I mean, we've seen so many movies about that, haven't we? Kissing up to the rich people. So this is just part of why it's so hard to leave a narcissist abuser. And they can make it impossible for you to leave, but they can also destroy your support group, thusly leaving you literally alone and on your own in an already tough, hard world. That is why domestic violence shelters need your help. They need to help those victims who have no one who will help them. It is also why it takes so long for victims to leave. They are walking away from their whole lives. I mean, I even had to walk away from a business that I built, right? That I built, and it was at a point where it was making millions. I had to walk away from that to get away from the abuser. But I can tell you, if I had gotten the business, if I had gotten 50% of the business, I sometimes wonder if that would have pushed him over the edge and if I would be alive today. I really do. Now, I don't know if he's capable of that. I don't even know that it would have even happened. But I'm glad I didn't have to find out, right? Because that was my biggest concern in the end. I was like, you know what? What if I get this business? What's he going to do? He's going to lose it. He's going to lose it, because then I would have won, he wouldn't have won. And that's really what it's all about for misogynistic men, is it's about winning, right? So that's why so many go back to their abuser, and they find it hard to lose everything and everyone in their lives. Even their own family may side with the abuser to avoid the abuser's wrath. So, you know, you got to think about all that. It's not just about leaving the abuser. It's about leaving everything in order to get away from the abuser. Everything. Literally having nothing but the clothes on your back and having to completely start over again alone, 9 times out of 10. Because all those people are going to abandon you, because of either he's going to give them grief and make their lives miserable for supporting you, or they just want to stay with the person who has the money, right? You're sacrificing everything and everything you worked for professionally and personally your whole life. You're just sacrificing everything. And I think that that's just the biggest thing that people don't realize. And God, I wish I could just pound it into people's heads. And I didn't even go through the worst of an abuse, right? I pretty much, after he tried to abuse me a few times, I told him if he had ever touched me again, that I was going to wait until he fell asleep and I was going to go get a ball bat and beat him within an inch of his life. And then I was going to take care of him the rest of his life. He wasn't going to be able to talk. He wasn't going to be able to walk. He wasn't going to be able to do anything. I would, you know, I would have to help him go to the bathroom and the whole nine yards. And then I was going to make his life miserable. And I was going to say somebody broke into the house and beat him up, you know. But, you know, it scared him enough that he backed off. You know, I think he started thinking, wow, she's as crazy as I am, you know. But what I wanted to make clear to him is, this isn't going to happen again. Do you understand me? You're never going to touch me again. Because if you do, either I'm leaving you forever, or I'm going to do something crazy. Which I wouldn't have done that. I would have never done that. But it did make him question whether I would or not, right? It did make him question if I was actually serious. And in the moment, it was after he had tried to, you know, physically abuse me, and I, you know, got away from him and said, you know, if you ever touch me again, you know, this is how it's going to go down. You're going to lose me, and or I'm going to do something to you. And, you know, you hear about women who have been in abuse situations who kill their abusers. You know, when it goes as far as it has with some of those women, I don't think you can blame them, because they're getting pummeled on a daily, regular basis by somebody who is supposed to love them. So they finally snap and just know that they're gonna get killed. They know that they're probably gonna end up dying if they don't shoot this person or if they don't kill this person. And it really, I feel, it's self-defense, you know? So you hear about so many women being murdered by their partners, boyfriends, husbands, whatever. And in some countries, it's legal to do that. It used to be legal to do that here. Kill your wife. Beat your wife was legal. All of that was legal. It used to be legal for men to check their women, their wives into an asylum, find a reason to check their wives into an asylum, divorce them, and then marry somebody else. That's how a lot of men got out of being married to the women that they were with once they got older or maybe more unattractive, or let's put this out there, they got a backbone and weren't willing to put up with the stuff that these men were throwing at them anymore. That's when the men would say, well, she's not performing her wifely duties, she's crazy, she needs to go into an asylum. And because that woman is finally grown and matured, because many times these men married much younger women, right? Because they wanted to control them. And they, you know, once that person finally grows into the adult that they should be, because they were marrying almost children, right? And then they don't like it. They don't like it. They don't like that they can't control everything. Or they, like I said, a lot of men in this society, even today, they want to be like a parent. That's what mansplaining is. Whenever I can't believe how many times I'm like on social media, or I'm in a meeting, or I'm in some sort of a social atmosphere, and some man thinks that he has to explain something to me. Like I'm a child. And he knows more than I do. And 9 times out of 10, most of those men trying to explain it to me are stupider than I am by a mile, you know? And every time they say something, I kind of can, you know, I'll say something that makes them look stupid, because they are being stupid. If you're going to do that to somebody, don't expect them not to come back at you, right? And they feel like they're some sort of a parent of you, especially if they're older than you. They think that they can talk to you like you're a child. And it's like, no, we're adults now. You know, when I was, you know, 10, maybe you could have talked to me that way, but you can't talk to me that way now. And even I think sometimes talking to kids that way is disrespectful, because kids are highly intelligent. You know, they're highly intelligent beings, and you shouldn't be talking to kids that way. But mansplaining is a big red flag that some guy is going to be an abuser. And I'm not kidding. I have been on social media, and I've tried to have like an intellectual back and forth with people like that. And it always comes down to them getting nasty and mean, and then calling me some sort of, you know, bitch, cunt, whatever. And because I come back with facts, and I come back with actual data. And many times I don't even respond. I'll just go get an article and copy and paste that. And then they get mad because you've proved them wrong in the public eye. Ooh. And then they get mad about that, because you're not just saying, oh, yes, master. Yes, you're so right. You're such a big, strong man, and I don't know anything. You know, that's what they want you to respond with, right? And that's not what you're responding with. And I thought something was interesting on Martin Luther King Day. They showed the Glorias on Bounce. And actually, they showed all films about women and fighting for equality on Bounce, which I thought was an interesting choice and a very good choice for Martin Luther King Day, since at the forefront of our society, that is really the biggest issue right now, is equality of women of all colors, right? But one of the things that they said in the movie is that, you know, oh gosh, I've lost my train of thought. But they were talking about how women are fighting for equality, and how these men are constantly looking at women as, that's what it was. They're constantly looking at women as children, and that when equality came along, when the ERA came along, Equal Rights Amendment for Women came along, there was a literal shift in society. And this is something that came out in the Brooke Shields documentary as well. There was a literal shift in society, like after the 60s, somewhere in the 70s and the 80s, where they started sexualizing little girls. And what that has now become is child sex trafficking, right? That what they were saying is that if we can't sexualize women and we can't control women, then now we're going to go after little girls so we can control little girls. So little girls that are, you know, under the age of a certain age, right? And that's what's ended up happening is, well, if we can't control women because women are totally aware and equality is out there and women are working, then we're going to start preying on little girls, children. And that's when the rise of child sex slavery came up. And we had evolved over time from, you know, the early days when people were getting married way younger because people didn't live very long. Like, people were lucky to live 40, 50 years back then. So they would get married as soon as puberty hit because, you know, you only had so many years to live before some disease killed you, right? So people got married a lot younger then, but we had evolved from that since medicine and things had happened to take care of us. And so we were able to live longer, and we had evolved from being the society that was, you know, preying on children, men preying on children, marrying much younger women. And now we had evolved to where most people were marrying people their own age, right? Now, because women are equal and have a say and men want to control someone, they're going after little girls. And I thought that was an interesting point, that our society has made that tectonic shift from, you know, being equal with your partner to now men wanting little girls. And there are many, you know, Islam, Muslim religions that are doing that. You know, they're, you know, little 7 and 8 year old girls who aren't even into puberty yet, and they're marrying them and having sex with them, and there are little girls that they're killing them because they're tearing them from the inside when they're having this crazy sex with them, you know, which is awful. That's a whole other subject. But this is the reason why women are struggling in society, and also go back to what this podcast has been about, why women don't leave when they have an abuser, because they have to step out into a society that thinks this way about females, about little girls, about women. And we don't have the support system that the men have. And I will say this a million times, men, you could change this. You can change this. You can stop thinking the way that you do. You can stop letting the misogyny that you grew up with dictate you, and you can start changing the way that you think, and you can start changing society by supporting women, by supporting equal rights amendments, by supporting, you know, women's right to choose what they do with their own bodies, by supporting women. You can change that by supporting equality in pay, by supporting, you know, pay transparency, all of that. Instead of standing there going, oh, well, we don't want to do that because then men will have to be equal to women. Oh, God, you know, you can change that. Stop thinking that way. And trust me, when women are equal, when we are all equal, things are going to be a lot better, because they're not very good now. Women dying because men think it's okay to murder their partners. You see that in the news every day. Women getting beat, abused, but you're seeing more and more murders of women and children, female children, because men think that they're allowed to do it and get away with it. And I have to admit, many times they do. I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, this is the tectonic shift that I see happening. But what do you think? You agree with me on the fact that, you know, people need to open their eyes a little bit more about why women don't leave abusive relationships, or even men who are in abusive relationships don't leave, because they get controlled and they can't leave? What's your experience been? Have any of you had similar experiences? Message me, let me know. We'll talk about that on future podcasts. Maybe we can have a podcast where we all get on and talk together and have a discussion about this. Let me know what you think. Let me know if that's something you'd like to do. Until next time, Amherst Eclectic.